Hello and welcome to the Woodard Report podcast, where we enrich businesses through business advisors. This podcast is your source for information and news you need for your accounting, bookkeeping, or tax practice, and it is proudly sponsored by Expensify and Rightworks. For more information about both Expensify and Rightworks, please visit woodard.com/podcast. And now your hosts, Joe Woodard and Heather Satterley.
Well, folks, I'm here today with my friend Randy Crabtree, and I'm excited about him being a part of this. Randy has joined us recently for one of our roundtables and talked about professional mental health, but we're here to talk about the broader category that fosters that, and that is a positive company culture. Randy's going to be covering that at a breakout session at the upcoming Scaling New Heights 2024 conference in Orlando, if you happen to be listening to this in time to still make it to that event. He is the co-founder of TriMerit Specialty Tax. He's the host of the Unique CPA podcast, which I've been honored to be a guest on. Thank you, Randy, in the past. And Bridging the Gap Conference. He's the host of that. He's also a keynote speaker, as I said, a breakout speaker at Scaling New Heights. And he's a fellow Top 100 Most Influential People in Accounting Award winner alongside me from Accounting Today. So, Randy, we're thrilled to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks, and thanks for allowing me to be on your top 100 list. I know you've been on there quite a bit, and it was a thrill for me to get on there. So.
I think it's Ron Baker's list, just for the record, and he lets us all on. But yeah, but just full credit to Accounting Today. So, our joking aside, it is Accounting Today's list. In case anybody missed that, I don't want to upset them and not get on the list next year. Okay, so Randy, we're here to talk about company culture. And I'm just going to let you kind of kick it off. This is your topic. You're the expert. What's the one piece of advice you would give us that's sort of key to get the conversation going to drive this positive company culture? And what is positive company culture? Maybe we start there.
Yeah, either one of those is great. I think driving company culture starts with leadership, but it isn't all just leadership. So you have to be intentional about it. But we can expand on that. For what creates a good culture, or how do you define a good corporate culture? Man, I have such a hard time putting that into words. I mean, I can see it, I can look at it, I can. Oh, wow, that's great. Well, how do you define it? And so, this is not necessarily a definition, but I think it defines how you get to a good culture. And I probably should write this down because it's in my head, but weak cultures are based on rules, and strong cultures are based on relationships. And this is something that I, was going back and forth with ChatGPT about a year ago, trying to figure out how do you define culture. But I like that sentence because as accountants, we can fall back on rules so easily because we are rules based in what we do. I mean, we have to follow, tax code. We have to follow, GAAP and FASB's and all these things and consistency, same as last year, all this kind of stuff. And all those rules can trap us into this. Okay. Hey, yeah, our culture has to be based on rules. We have to work. You have to be at your desk 9 to 5. We have to work weekends in the tax season. We have to bill by the hour because we've always done that. All these rules. And we don't even,
or because I don't know if you're working if you don't do a timesheet. I hear that all the time.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. When I do this talk about this, people say, yeah, well, we're more of a remote environment now. And how do I know if someone's sitting at their computer? How do I track their time? I'm going to put like a widget on their computer so I know when they're there and when they're not. I'm like, oh man, that micromanaging is just going to crush a culture. But that's the way people look at it.
All right. So, yeah, you just hit on something really important is this tension. And I'm going to call it a tension to manage, not a balance to be achieved. The tension between the way process could liberate people and the way process could constrain people. Because process can be liberating as well. It can democratize knowledge. It can be empowering. And it could cause people to be more productive and theoretically, therefore, make more money because they're hitting productivity bonuses. And it could create organizational alignment, yep. But carried too far. And I think maybe that's the distinction is between process and regulation. And one is intended to empower, and the other is intended to respond to my own fears about being taken advantage of or wasting money. So they kind of they come out of very different sources, but they mimic each other. They appear to be the same thing, and they overlap, and that's why it's attention.
Yeah, I need to start listening to everything you say because I got to build these into my presentations. This is awesome.
Well, Andy Stanley. Well, thank you for that, Randy. I appreciate it. Andy Stanley has a really cool quote. He says, "Regulations do not cause people to achieve their best. Regulations prevent people from being their worst." Yep. And that's really what you're getting at. And I'm hearing you say, well, a positive company culture is one that facilitates people achieving the best version of themselves.
Yeah. For me, people, I mean, culture is the most important. People create the culture. Leadership needs to be involved in that and hopefully start that culture intentionally, you know, not just let it evolve. But for us, for me personally, let me give you a quick story, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. My second job in public accounting, was actually my third career. The first two were very short. I was a computer programmer for a while. I just couldn't sit at my desk nonstop. It was just awful. And then I went into sales and I was awful at it. But then I decided to go back to school to go to accounting. That's a side story. I don't know why I brought that up. But bottom line, second job, 2 years in public accounting. I'm following rules now. Hey, 2 years, I got experience. Now I got to go somewhere else and get 2 more years experience before I start my own firm. And this first job I had, I loved. The culture was great. The people were great. We all got along. We built relationships with each other. In fact, the managing partners of those firm, that first firm, I'm still friends with today because of the culture they created. And that's 35 years ago or whatever. But in my mind, it's like, oh, I have to go see how someone else does this if I'm going to start my own firm. I went to the second firm. It was in Chicago and ended up being this tyrant, micromanaging, managing partner that it just came to a head one day. And it's like, I can't do this. I cannot work for this person. I'm sure personally he was a good person, but in the office, it's just, these are the rules and you have to follow it. And it got to a point where I was going to walk five blocks back from an audit back to the office. And he actually swore at me to get in the effing cab to drive back because he didn't want to waste that. I probably would have beat him there, honestly. But it was like his mind, I had to get back to the office fast. And when that happened, I right then and there said, I'm going to start keeping track of what I like as an employee, because if I'm going to be an employer at some point, I need to set the stage for these things so that people don't feel like I feel right now. And that, just to end that story, the next day I went into the office, and this is probably not the best thing because it was January, but I went into the office, I put notes on all the files, I organized everything. I walked out at lunchtime, called one of the other partners and said, hey, just so you know, I'm not coming back. Here's all, everything's organized. I just can't deal with, you know, X managing partner. And they understood, actually. But I called the firm I was at before that and just let them know, hey, I left this other firm. Their first question was, do you want to come back? I'm like, I will be there tomorrow. And honestly.
All right, so let me unpack several things about that story that have lots of truths in them.
Yeah.
Right. One is you've got to make sure you're hiring people that are energized by the role that you're putting them into. Because you were not energized by the sales role. You were not energized by anything you did until you got to accountancy, right?
Yep.
So fit for the role. And a lot of people tell me, how could they possibly know that? Well, just hire based off of what they've consistently been able to do in the past, right? And how little they're job hopping and how, you know, they've been able to just make it 5 or 10 years in their previous roles in accounting. And then, you know, they're happy there, right?
Yep.
Either that or they're the most determined people in the world to stay where they're unhappy, but you go with happy. But anyway, yes, there's that. And then there are DISC assessments, things you can do. But Randy's point I want to make sure everybody gets is don't hire somebody who's going to be miserable in the role you're hiring them for.
Yep.
Okay. or don't promote somebody internally or move them around on the bus to move them into a role they're going to be miserable at. All right, so that's number one, big takeaway, Randy. Second is you could take somebody who's happy in their role, who loves accounting like Randy does, and you can make them miserable by micromanaging them. So don't micromanage. That's what I heard him say. So fit for the role, don't micromanage. Good point, Randy.
Yeah, and just to expand on what you said, because I am a big proponent of that, the right people. The role, in my mind, will find them, or they'll find their role as well. Just because they came in as, you know, as a project manager in our business, project manager, doesn't mean that they can't, you know, be going to sales or business development if they want. We've had more than a handful of people. In fact, we hired an assistant for me about 3 years ago, and right out of school, she's great. She's still with us today, but pretty early on, and I was doing a lot of work with marketing, you could tell that she had this passion for the marketing department. And it was like, well, if that's where she gets, you know, fuel, this is where her passion comes through. Within 6 months, she became part of the marketing department. I got another assistant. But yeah, she found that role. You saw where her passion was, and there's no reason to keep her from that passionate role that she had.
I could not agree more. I've done that same sort of, Jim Collins calls it moving seats on the bus. Mm-hmm. I've done that moving seats on the bus thing. And I did it, interestingly enough, coincidentally, it's going to sound like I'm making this up for a Me Too, but I did it with the marketing. Yep. I hired somebody to lead one program for our communities area of Woodard, and quickly realized that he had this passion, which he voiced and he recognized too. And now he actually runs all marketing efforts for our entire organization. And it's been a career opportunity for him because he positioned himself to advance faster, but he's revolutionized our marketing outcomes in the process too. So everybody is winning here. He's making more money. We're making more money. He's happy. I'm happy. And I can find somebody else to do that thing he left. Right.
Oh, for sure. And what that does is that creates this atmosphere of everybody's happy. We can grow. We can, and we don't lose anybody. You know, if yes. People are in the roles that they enjoy, I mean, I probably brag too much, but in the 17 years since we started Trimerit, and we're about 77, 78 people now, I think, and I was trying to count this morning, I think we've had about 5 or 6 people voluntarily leave, just decide that they want to go, you know, into another company, another role. Some of them have been, one of the people was, well, he was project manager working on research and development tax credit studies. He decided he wanted to go to medical school. I mean, I almost don't want to count him as leaving. We celebrated that. That's a big deal.
Sure, absolutely.
But yeah. if you keep people, just your profitability is going up. I mean, that
yes.
alone.
Employee retention is connected to reduction in cost. It absolutely is. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because a lot of the accountants listening in are going to be like, well, this culture thing is great. And of course, we always want to be happy, but I've got friends and I've got family and we're here to make money. And if you're making culture primarily a financial consideration and you're dismissing it because it's too soft, hear what Randy said. Employee turnover has a cost. And I would also add to that, Randy, when you're in a lack of when your role isn't energizing you, when it's depleting you, there is also a cost. So there is a financial implication here. Can I come back around to your micromanaging, this cab story?
Oh, yeah.
I wish that it was ridiculous, but I've actually heard so many things like that. But it is absurd, even though it's not unfortunately that uncommon. But, you know, this micromanaging thing, if we don't, though, provide that kind of management, how do we make sure people achieve their best? Because there's a difference between I choose to walk 5 blocks, which, frankly, I would encourage someone to do, build up endorphins, build up energy, stay healthy, okay? Because I know they're going to be stronger for me and themselves. So very short-sighted of the jump in the cab. But beyond just that, how do I make sure that somebody isn't saying they're working 8 hours, think they're working 8 hours, but they actually got all their household chores done in there in the cracks, but they didn't even realize how much time they were wasting. So that's the tension again. So I don't want to micromanage, but I also don't want to enable people to be slackers, maybe without even realizing it. So how do we provide that accountability? What do we do?
Yeah. So, and then I'm, again, the, you know, was it Jennifer Wilson does the Anytime, Anywhere work survey. I'm a big, you know, fan of that. Allow people to have that freedom, but still.
Can you unpack it then for the folks that don't know what that is? What is the Anytime, Anywhere survey?
So she did the survey. It's like, okay, just finding out what people want. So even not from an employer standpoint, but an employee standpoint, they want this autonomy. They want to be able to work where they want, when they want, especially, you know, I'm a boomer. You know, people will look at me different than they'll look at the next generations and the next gen. And if you are in my situation, a boomer, and I don't think I'm a typical boomer. People may say I am. I don't know. But I look at it.
I think Gen X would say you are.
Yeah, you're probably
that's
right.
What they say of me, and I don't think I'm a typical boomer. Anyway, go ahead.
But what it is it's just allowing. So, okay, just to answer your question, what we do is we don't track time. We've never tracked time from day one. I mean, that's a way people look at, are you being productive? It's based on time. I think you and I both are not fans of that.
We're not fans of it. Ed Kless says it's the imprecise measurement of the wrong thing.
Yep.
Yeah. I love that quote. Okay.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
So without the timesheet, then how do you know?
So we know projects or how many projects are going to get done, who's working on what projects. Each project has a different value. So somebody might get 20 projects done, you know, and that's a, you know, $500,000, you know, billing or whatever. And somebody might get 10 projects done and it's still $500,000. So you can't just go on projects. You have to go on total, you know, revenue. And sometimes that's not even the best. But there's other
metrics. Because you might have priced the project wrong.
Exactly.
You might have had a scope creep problem. Yes.
Exactly. But, yes. But I think for me personally, and you can see project by project, you have a gut feeling, you have an idea, and you can put, and I am not a KPI, I'm not a process, I'm not a procedure guy. That's another thing. Find the people that do like that and empower them, because that stuff bores the hell out of me. But if you put these things in place, if you can track it, and really to me, the bottom line is, what's the overall profitability for the year? Hey, and you can do it by month, you can do it by quarter, you could do it whenever. And you know the cyclical part of your business, you know when revenue is coming in, you know, it just because it's the season. And that's what I look at, me personally. Now, the people who enjoy the things I don't will look at it deeper, but it's more, we base it on the project and the type of project and who's working on those and how many are they getting done.
Yeah, and it's outcome-based, right? And so that's, I'm so glad that you mentioned that you're looking at it at the higher level, because people who record timesheets will try to run a profit and loss by professional, right? And it should be profit and loss by portfolio, because everybody's always zone playing everything. So how do you really know, you know, who's contributed to what in that process? And again, you have the timesheet, which is the imprecise measurement of the wrong thing. So you're never going to really get that as a picture. Then they try to get profit and loss by client, which is also not the right measurement. So what I'm hearing you say is, look, I look at the gross profit margin. In a larger business, maybe it's the gross profit margin by major portfolio or area of the company. And then if that group isn't hitting their gross profit margins, then you can ask the most important question, which is not what was on the timesheet, because that's not the important question. It's, why aren't we hitting margins? Let's all sit around and talk about this. Let's evaluate the circumstance, evaluate the client base, evaluate the process, evaluate the people, and let's together figure out what's missing here. And they'll always tell you, Randy. They'll tell you which clients are dragging them down. And then maybe not in that room, but they will pull you to the side and say which employees might be dragging them down. It'll come to light when the conversation's a healthy one.
Yep, I agree completely. And even, and you said an important thing, even the service line, we do some very intricate tax credits and incentives. When you look at like a research and development tax credit, the profitability on it's probably going to be higher because it's very intricate. We have to spend a lot of effort on documentation and qualification. And then you look at something like CostSeg. Well, that's still very important and intricate, but it is, one, more of a commodity service. And so we know the profitability is not going to be as good on that. But overall for us, we need to be able to offer all of these services. Now, there's things that we've looked at that we could be offering to the accounting profession. But one, it's are we going to compete with our customers, which are accountants? We don't want to do that. Two, does it fit in our core, you know, values of service that we're looking to offer? You know, hey, sure, we can make a lot of money if we, you know, brought in, you know, SALT, let's say, state and local tax. Mm-hmm. But that does not fit in with the technical aspect of the credits that we're working on.
It doesn't fit your vision.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So that gets us into the, now we've said the M word, we've said mission. So, you know, what I've found is that if people are mission minded, and that was the big takeaway I got from yours is, you know, your practice, Trimerit, has a mission. And we stay on mission, we hire to the mission, and by doing so, then we don't have mission creep. And then we start having people that signed up because they're passionate about tax credits, which I know sounds weird, but maybe not to our audience. Some people would be passionate about that because we're
right.
Well, some of you are passionate about bank recs in this audience. But, you know, this is what drives us. So you have people who are passionate about tax credits, saving these clients money, being that hero. And now all of a sudden you're doing sales tax quarterly forms. You're back to depleting them.
Yep.
So stay on mission. Randy's point's a really good one. Mission serves vision. Vision drives culture. And another big takeaway. I want to come back to the accountability piece.
Yes.
Because we talked about what it's kind of not. It's not a timesheet. We talked about a little bit what it is, profit and loss by our gross profit margin by portfolio. But we've also been deploying for the last 3 years, John Doerr's, in his book, Measure What Matters, his particular approach to objectives and key results. So I would recommend everybody read Measure What Matters by John Doerr. It has changed the game for us. But what it does, Randy, is it allows us, when we're delegating the outcomes, if it's an objective or a key result, whatever it is, the person takes ownership of, hey, I'm going to drive that key result. And once it becomes their outcome to drive, then I don't have to worry as much about writing down how it got there. So there's an old golf joke I love where the folks got chips up onto the green and it bounces off of the tree, bounces off of the rake, hits the pole and happens to drop in the hole. And he turns to his buddy and says, well, I'm glad you don't write down how it got there. Right. So that's kind of the joke, right? If as soon as somebody owns the fact I got to get this ball into this hole, I don't really care how it got there. I just care that it got there without exorbitant cost, which we've already addressed.
Yeah. And the thing with that, though, the one thing I would add to that, and I'm sure you do too, is making sure that outcome is not getting to that outcome that people know that they can ask for help. People, if there is an issue, if there's, you know, something that they're personally dealing with, I'm so a big proponent of empathy and vulnerability when you're working with people. And if somebody thinks, I just have to power through this and I have to keep going and because this is the outcome I need to get, but man, I'm not getting there. That's where burnout, another passion of mine, comes in that can click. So people need to understand that, yes, here's the outcomes we need, but do not be afraid to share if you need help. If you can't meet that goal, because maybe we just said it wrong. Maybe we put too much on your plate. Don't be afraid to let us know that. And I think
this isn't working. Help. Yeah.
Yep.
And that help could be peer to peer and that help could be to your team lead. But what you've just hit on there is about appropriate levels of professional vulnerability. I'm not a super powered person, right? Superman, superwoman. I can't do this by myself. And I need to cry uncle here. And if you fostered a positive team culture where that vulnerability isn't judged, it isn't taken advantage of, then people will continue to do it. As soon as they're judged for it, or as soon as politics come in and people capitalize on it, then for their own political gain, nobody's ever going to share a weakness again. They're just going to fail and quit or burn out and quit. So really good point, Randy. So we boiled the ocean on this thing a little bit. And so let me just kind of summarize what we've talked about. Randy led out by saying that here's sort of a definition of culture, which is hard to define, but you kind of define it by its fruits. People are mentally healthy. They're productive. They own their outcomes. They're not depleted. They're energized. They enjoy coming to work. So you can sort of tell the tree by its fruit, right? It's what first point I got from you. It takes a lot of intentionality with leadership to make all of this happen. And that does not mean micromanagement. It's actually opposite of what you meant by intentionality. That you can hold people accountable without having to deal with overregulating them. We talked a little bit about the tension between process, which liberates and democratizes knowledge and empowers, and regulations, which deplete them, and micromanagement versus management. And then ultimately, it was about these outcomes. So we also inserted fit for the role. You made a good point about that in your previous roles. And then it was about how do you hold people accountable? And we came up with several ways, landing on maybe even peer-to-peer accountability is key to this whole thing. Randy, any thoughts to close us out?
Yeah, no. So like I said, like I always know, you're a genius. You summarize things perfectly. You come up with the key points on that. I think the one thing, though, is just making sure, and I think you built that in there, that you value the people, that the people are important, and people feel the freedom to be themselves at work, not be their job title, but be who they truly are. And then one last thing with people is diversity is so important. If everybody was a clone of me, we would not have a business. It just couldn't happen. And so diversity from all different aspects of growing your business are so important.
Unity is good. Uniformity is bad. You know, harmony is better than everybody singing the same. So I couldn't agree with you more there. And we often limit diversity to race or to gender, which those are important things to consider. I'm not diminishing them. But what Randy's saying is let's broaden out even beyond that while including those things, because those also bring points of view in play that we need, and a sense of belonging and representation. All those things are true. But what I'm hearing Randy say is and not or. It's also a diversity of skill sets and experience and personality style and all of those good things too. So Randy, yes. Very powerful conversation. Great having you here. Look forward to seeing you in Orlando this June.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, please visit woodard.com/podcast.